The Productive Woman, episode 492. Hello and welcome to this episode of The Productive Woman. My name is Laura McClellan, and this is a podcast about productivity for busy women. My goal is to help you find the tools and encouragement you need to manage your time, life, stress, and stuff so you can accomplish the things you care about most and make a life that matters. Well, thank you so much for joining me. In this episode, we're talking about introspection and about some questions we can ask ourselves to help us craft a life that matters. You'll find more information and links to tons of resources in the show notes for this episode at theproductivewoman.com/492. This episode is brought to you by Calm. You know, there's been so much research about how chronic stress can wreak havoc on our health, our sense of happiness, and our overall well-being. And that stress can manifest in many different ways. As you're listening, for instance, do you find yourself clenching your jaw, holding tension in raised shoulders, or just trying to power through after a sleepless night? If this sounds like you, let's talk about something that could make a real difference, and that's Calm. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Calm recognizes that everyone faces unique challenges in their daily lives, that mental health needs differ from one person to the next, and that time for things like meditation may vary. And since self-care practices are so deeply personal, Calm strives to provide content that caters to your preferences and needs. They offer guided meditations that range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They, of course, offer sleep stories with hundreds of titles to choose from, including sleep meditations and calming music that will have you drifting off to dreamland quickly and naturally. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and so much more. Calm can help you dedicate just a few minutes each day to reduce stress, improve your focus, and increase your overall well-being. The Calm app puts the tools you need to feel better in your back pocket. And if you go to calm.com/TPW, you can take advantage of a special offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription. That's the one that I have that I pay for out of my own money. And I love the fact that they offer new content every week, so it's always fresh. There's always something new that can keep your attention and help you with this. So you can stress less, sleep more, and live better with Calm. For listeners of The Productive Woman, Calm is offering that exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/TPW. Just go to Calm, that's calm.com/TPW for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. Once more, that's calm.com/TPW. Okay, let's get into our topic this week. I used to own horses. Several years ago, I had a young horse in training with a trainer who required as part of his training regime that the owner come to his facility at least once a week for a lesson with that horse. He always said, "It doesn't matter what I can do with the horse, it's what you are able to do that matters." So I would go once a week and have a lesson riding the horse and you know, improving my riding skills and my relationship with that horse. During my weekly lessons, he would share various concepts kind of behind his training philosophy. And one of those concepts was four key questions that he asked himself before every session with a horse or its owner, questions that helped guide him in structuring the session. And the first question, he said, is, "What do you want?" As he explained it, without knowing the answer to that question, you'd simply be wasting your time in the session. Without a destination in mind, you won't actually get anywhere. And I always thought how that question and the other questions that he asked applied to life in general. And that question has stuck with me. It's come up in various situations where I faced a challenge or whatever, where I would kind of hear his voice and take a step back and ask myself, okay, what do you want in this situation? What do you want out of this relationship? Whatever it might be. One key element of making a life that matters is awareness, knowing who you are, what's important to you, and what you want your life to look like. Knowing what you want is key. And this kind of awareness requires time and attention to our thoughts, to what's going on in our head. And that can be something that's hard to come by when our daily lives are very full. Even when they're full of good things, we can get so busy doing that we don't take the time to take that step back and ask those questions. What do I want? Taking or making time for self-reflection has to be intentional. It's not going to just happen. And so with all that in mind, I started thinking about some questions that can help us evaluate and shape our lives in meaningful and intentional ways. And these questions can serve as a guide to explore our personal aspirations, to confront our limitations, and to carve out a path and a life that aligns very closely with our innermost values and desires. So I'm going to offer 10 questions that I would consider kind of essential for us to ask ourselves from time to time to help guide us in making a life that matters. And they come in several sort of categories. First of all, understanding ourself. Second, defining our legacy and our passions. Third, overcoming barriers. Fourth, redefining success and developing community support. And fifth and finally, lifelong learning and self-care. So let's dig into what those are. There are basically two questions under each of those categories that I would encourage you to think about, and we'll talk about why. So under the category of understanding ourselves, I think that has to be a starting point, knowing who we are, and that helps us figure out what we want, right? So question number one is, what are my core values and how do they shape my choices? Why does this matter? Well, understanding your values helps align your actions with what is genuinely important to you. So what does that mean? What are values? I found various definitions. One article described them as a set of beliefs or opinions that influence how you live your life. Another writer said that values inform your behaviors and understanding of right and wrong. They help shape how you think, act, and feel. And ultimately, your values help you find happiness and purpose in life. And I thought that was a great kind of description of what values mean. When we're asking ourselves, what are my core values? Understanding what that means is kind of important. And that same article goes on to say, understanding your own values is a fundamental part of self-awareness and getting to know yourself as a human being. With a better understanding of your values, you can develop more empathy. You might show better emotional regulation, and you might improve your communication skills. But identifying your values is difficult, this writer said. It requires deep self-reflection and self-honesty, both of which take hard work. And so I invite you to do that work. Ask yourself, what are my core values and how do they shape my choices in terms of who I spend my time with, who I have in my life, how I spend my time, what I do with my time, my energy, and attention? That same article that I was just quoting from suggests 20 examples of core values that people might hold. As you're asking yourself this question about what are your values, here are some examples from this article. Everything from altruism, dependability, integrity, generosity, courage, gratitude, well-being, sustainability, family, self-respect, adaptability, uniqueness, assertiveness, support, open-mindedness, personal growth, flexibility, frugality, improvement, self-reliance. These are all core values that some people hold. And they're, you know, this is not a judgment that some are good, some are bad. These are just some examples. Another writer says that the closer your decisions each day align with the big picture view of what's most important to you, the more likely you are to create the future you want for yourself. And I love that. So identifying what your values are, what are those most important concepts in your life, and letting those things guide the decisions you make each day is a key step toward creating a life that matters. This last article I mentioned offers 5 steps to defining your core values. Number one, to prepare yourself for some deep work. Number two, brainstorm to explore resonant options. So maybe, you know, do some research, find other lists of possible values and see which ones resonate with you. Number three, select 4 to 5 values that are most important to you. And number four, prioritize your top values in order of importance. And number five, document your values to refer to later. So that's kind of a step-by-step approach to identifying values that are key and most important to you, and being aware of them as you make decisions throughout your day. So that's question number one. What are my core values and how do they shape my choices? Question number two is, what are my strengths and how can I leverage them more effectively? This is an important question. I think maybe a hard one to answer. I think most of us, or many of us at least, have an easier time identifying our weaknesses than our strengths. But asking yourself this question and answering it honestly is really important as you are working to make a life that matters. So strengths are those personal traits and skills that can enable you to flourish in various areas of life, including careers, relationships, civil society, all of that. One article put it this way: within positive psychology, personal strengths are defined as our built-in capacities for particular ways of thinking, feeling, and behaving. So this is about asking these questions and not judging your answers, but just seeing what answers come up for you and what resonates with you. And in this case, recognizing and utilizing your natural talents can lead to greater success and fulfillment, boosting self-confidence and self-awareness, increasing our appreciation of the differences among people and perspectives. When we can recognize our own strengths, we can maybe also recognize the strengths that other people have. For instance, identifying and recognizing, acknowledging your strengths can help you find a career, for example. That's one way that this is a useful question to ask. One expert, though, that I read warns against limiting yourself based on your current strengths and ignoring your potential to develop new strengths. So this expert encourages us to ask both, what are my strengths, but also which strengths are worth building? And I thought that's an important thing. So we can identify what areas that we're strong now, but also, especially in the area of career planning and all that sort of thing, what other strengths might I develop? So in kind of identifying what your personal strengths are, one article on the Positive Psychology blog discussed the work of some scientists who described a list of 24 core personal strengths that, according to them, are evident across human history and world cultures, and each of which exist in all of us to varying degrees, according to these scientists. And in this article, it talked about how these 24 core personal strengths are associated with what they call the 6 virtues of positive psychology theory. So the 6 virtues are that they describe are wisdom, courage, humanity, justice, temperance, and transcendence. And so under the category of wisdom, the personal strengths they identify are creativity, curiosity, love of learning, open-mindedness, perspective. Under the category or the virtue of courage, They talk about the strengths of authenticity, bravery, persistence, and zest. Under the virtue of humanity, they talk about kindness, love, and social intelligence. The virtue of justice, the strengths they talk about are fairness, leadership, and teamwork. Under the virtue of temperance, the strengths they talk about are forgiveness, modesty or humility, prudence, and self-regulation. And then finally, under the virtue of transcendence, they identify five possible personal strengths, including appreciation of beauty and excellence, gratitude, hope, humor, and religiousness or spirituality. So I thought those were great, a great place to start to identify where are you strong in some of these areas. That same article discussed the attributes of mental strength, such as adaptability. And that made me think of our discussion recently in episode 486 about the concept of mental agility that's discussed in the book Switchcraft. So I thought that was interesting. Some of the other attributes of mental strength, according to this article and these scientists, include endurance, steadfastness, dependability, and effectiveness. And hopefully you recognize some of those in yourself. So there are various ways for identifying your own personal and professional strengths and answering this question of what are my strengths and how can I leverage them more effectively. So first of all, you can take a strengths test. There are numerous such tests available online that can help provide helpful insights in what your strengths might be. Another great way is to ask trusted family, friends, and colleagues, work colleagues, because they can often provide insights. We're often better at identifying strengths in other people than in ourselves. And so maybe someone that you trust that has seen you in action can help you identify what your strengths are. A third way is to make note of where you excel in work, in relationships, and so on, and where you achieve the best results. And then ask yourself, what are the strengths behind that achievement? So those are three ways that you can help answer this question for yourself and identify your own personal and professional strengths. There are many more suggestions in some of the resources that will be listed in the show notes for this episode. So if you want to dig in deeper there, you can find that. So in this area of understanding yourself, asking and answering these questions about our values and our strengths can help lead to an understanding that is really fundamental to making decisions that lead to a fulfilling and a meaningfully productive life. So the next category of questions is defining your legacy and passions. So question number three is, what kind of legacy do I want to leave behind? And this is a question I've been asking myself a lot. I haven't sat down and really written out answers, but it's in the back of my mind a lot. I think maybe just because of the age I am, I'm going to be 64 in a few days. So I'm thinking about the legacy I'm leaving behind. So I just think this is a great question and can really help guide how we use our time, our energy, and our attention on a day-to-day basis. So what is legacy? Well, one definition is an amount of money or property left to someone in a will. Well, but that's not what I'm talking about here. Another definition in the dictionary of legacy is the long-lasting impact of particular events, actions, etc., that took place in the past or of a person's life. Tony Robbins has called legacy a gift that is passed down through generations, and I like that. So that's what we're talking about. What long-lasting impact do you want your life to have? Thinking about that, thinking about what legacy you want to leave behind can help provide a very clear direction both for long-term goals and our daily actions. And so that's why I think this is such a great question to ask and answer for yourself. Centuries ago, Pericles is quoted as saying that what you leave behind is not what is engraved in stone monuments, but what is woven into the lives of others. And that's what I think about when I think about legacy for myself. In her TED Talk, which I'll link in the show notes to the video of her TED Talk, Ann Aden begins her talk about legacy by pointing out that the most valuable resource we have as human beings is time. She says that the way you use your time changes your reality, and your reality controls your destiny, and your destiny controls what she calls your legacy. And she asks herself the question on her birthday each year, if I die tomorrow, what impact have I had by how I've used my time? And I think that's a great question. And I do recommend her TED Talk. It's available on YouTube. As I said, I'll put a link in the show notes. It's less than 8 minutes long, but really very inspiring. One blogger that I read suggests that we can leave a meaningful legacy by expanding our vision beyond ourselves to engage in activities that make the world a better place. And she also encourages us to create something, to be a role model, to raise our children well, and to express love daily to family and friends, and treat even strangers with love. These are all ways that we can leave a meaningful legacy behind. Tony Robbins also suggests that to leave a legacy, we start by discovering our purpose, identifying our natural skills and abilities, thinking of question two that we've already talked about, recognize our passions, more about that later, and how they can meet a need in the world. And in an article on HuffPost, another writer offers 5 ways to leave a great legacy, including support the people and causes that are important to you, reflect and decide what's most important in your life. You know, that's kind of behind this, all the questions on this episode. Share your blessings with others, be a mentor to others, and pursue your passions because they are infectious. And so these are all ways that we can leave a legacy. But starting here with what kind of legacy do you want to leave behind? I think this is a great question to ponder. But these suggestions that I've just read from the materials that I consulted leads to the next question, question 4, which is, what am I passionate about and how can I incorporate that into my daily life? This is a really good question to ask because engaging regularly with your passions can make everyday life more enjoyable and more meaningful. As one writer has said, a happy, thriving life is achieved through creating space for the things you love. In other words, pursuing your passions. I think maybe Gretchen Rubin has summarized this best. She says, a passion gives you a reason to keep learning and to work toward mastery. It can often give you a reason to travel and therefore to have new experiences, so key to happiness. It gives you something in common with other people and so fosters social bonds. It gives you purpose. It often has a satisfying physical aspect, rock climbing, fly fishing, knitting. It gives meaningful structure to your time. It makes the world a richer place. And when you're in pain, she says, it can be a refuge, a distraction, a solace. And I love that. I think that really says everything that needs to be said about why it's important to identify and pursue your passion. Of course, the first step to this is identifying what you're passionate about, which is why this question is one of the 10 essential questions for making a life that matters. And as has been said, by taking the time to identify what drives you, you will gain clarity on areas of your life that may need to change and the steps that you need to take to increase your happiness. So another article I read suggests the following steps to help identify your passions. First of all, think like a kid. Remember what you were excited about when you were a child. And so look back and think about what was exciting to me when I was very young. A second way is to brainstorm what you love. The article says, wondering how to know if you're passionate about something? Think of situations where time flies by. Notice what makes you feel like a kid again, or simply what makes you feel most happy, free, and alive as an adult. Consider what you're most curious about. Define what you wish you had more time for. If you've thought of something that is interesting but doesn't quite fill you with a sense of purpose and excitement, you're not there yet. Keep thinking until you land on something that makes you enthusiastic and motivated. That's your passion, and that's where you will create and serve best. And so I like that. This writer also suggests get out of your comfort zone. Try new experiences. Get into new areas that can maybe help you come across something that you feel passionate about. And finally, the writer says, view life as an adventure. And then, of course, once you've identified something or more than one thing that you're passionate about, brainstorm ways to make time in your daily life to pursue those things. That is, this question has two parts. What am I passionate about? And how can I incorporate that into my daily life? So spending time thinking about that can be very, very useful. Asking these two questions is important to making a life that matters because envisioning a legacy and engaging with passions can help provide direction and motivation for your daily life. All right, the next category of questions is about overcoming barriers. So question number five is, what barriers am I facing? This is a great question to ask as you are trying to identify steps to take in your life. I think of Brooke Castillo and her method for goal setting or putting together a to-do list is identifying something she wants to accomplish and then asking herself, what are the barriers? What are the challenges I'm going to face here? And how will I overcome them? And how will I overcome those challenges becomes her to-do list. And I think that's a great approach. So asking yourself, what barriers am I facing in life? There are almost always obstacles to achieving any goal worth pursuing. Some of these are internal. They're barriers we create for ourselves, whether consciously or unconsciously. And some are external, situations, conditions, people from outside us that get between us and the goals we're setting for ourselves. The good news is that most obstacles can be overcome if we are A, aware of them, and B, taking purposeful action to overcome them. So the first step to overcoming obstacles or barriers is awareness, identifying them. What is getting between me and the life that I want to create for myself? Be real honest about the things that are internal, interior to you. What barriers are you throwing up in front of yourself? Is it negative thinking, negative self-talk, you know, whatever it might be? And what are the external barriers? Once we've identified them, the next step is taking intentional action, preparing for them with a plan to address them when they come. Whenever I think about this, I think of several years ago at a law firm that I was working at. One of the partners gave a talk to the young associates about a transaction that they'd worked on, an action that our client was going to take that they expected would face resistance. And what they did was to spend time brainstorming every possible objection that an opposing party might raise in seeking an injunction to prevent the action that the client wanted to take. And for each one of those possible objections, the legal team then prepared a response. They literally, in this case, prepared a written legal brief that could be presented to a judge to defend against this injunction. And I always think about that when I think about this concept of identifying obstacles and then preparing a response to them. So in an article on the Lighthouse Therapy website, a therapist recommends two methods for identifying potential barriers or obstacles. One of them is the pessimism brainstorm. That is, brainstorm everything that could possibly go wrong with whatever this goal is you're trying to achieve or this action you're planning to take. Then she says, the next step is to look at this list and take the top 3 to 5 things that are most likely to happen. Write these things down and make them the main focus of things to avoid. So this, to me, is like the story about that law firm, identifying all the various objections that people could raise and then preparing a brief that they can give to a judge to say, this is why they're wrong and you should let us proceed. So just let your pessimistic mind go wild and think of all the things that could go wrong, and then write them all down, and then identify the top 3 to 5 that are most likely to occur and make those the focus of your efforts to avoid them, to, you know, come up with a plan to make sure they don't prevent you from achieving what you want to do. A second method that she talks about is to ask the pros. So find people who've already succeeded at what you want to do and ask them what obstacles they faced in their journey. You can get some great advice that way. Now, she says it's important not to let these things discourage you. You're going to list them. And then for each one, you're going to identify several steps you can take to overcome it. So asking yourself what your barriers are, what obstacles you're facing, that's only part of the step, right? You're not listing all these things so you can go, well, there's no point in trying. You're identifying them so you can plan actions to take to avoid them. Obstacles and barriers can be very specific to you and the life you're making for yourself, but there are also some that are common to many of us. So an article on the South Dakota State University website suggests several obstacles and barriers, that some of them that we put in front of ourselves: putting off your goals until someday, waiting to take action until you feel ready, viewing mistakes as a failure, that is a barrier we put in front of ourselves, or underestimating how hard it will be. Another writer suggests several things that can hold us back from our goals. And in her article, which I'll link in the show notes, she also suggests steps we can take to address each of them. And so some of the barriers she writes about are fear of failure, lack of clarity, procrastination, lack of support, negative self-talk. Other potential obstacles to consider that may be applicable to you are fear of what others might think, self-doubt, an overstuffed daily routine, a lack of resources, a lack of skills, a home or office environment that's not conducive to accomplishing what's important to you, or people in your life that don't support you, or maybe who even actively discourage you. Identifying obstacles and planning to overcome them, that second part, is so important. Those two things together empower you to progress despite challenges. Again, remember, this is really a two-part question. What barriers am I facing? But also, what steps can I take to overcome them? These are great questions to ask yourself. Question six, how do I balance personal needs with responsibilities? This is an important question for us to ask ourselves as women. Each of us has our own individual needs, desires, and goals, but we also have responsibilities to others, whether family members, friends, employers, colleagues, and society at large. And of course, we have a finite amount of time to tend to all of this. So finding a workable balance in the time that we devote to each, to our personal needs and to the responsibilities we have to others, it's crucial to maintaining personal well-being while also caring for those that around you. The idea being that this particular question is to ponder those things and come up with strategies that work for us so we can achieve a balance that feels right, which is going to be different for every one of us. So we've talked about this concept of kind of finding a balance between personal needs and responsibilities in several recent episodes, including episode 483. We talked about work-life integration. We also discussed it in episode 444, where the topic was balancing work, family, and self-care, and episode 284, thoughts about work-life balance. So those are all places you could go to maybe get some ideas to think about the answers to this question for yourself. This question very much builds on some of the earlier ones, especially question one about identifying our core values. Answering the question of how to balance personal needs and responsibilities to others requires us to dig deeper and identify what our personal needs actually are. And as in so many other areas of life, becoming more aware can help us design a path to intentional use of our time to make space for both things. One writer on Medium, in an article that was subtitled Navigating the Tension Between Self and Society, suggests some basic steps to answer this question and to structure our life in a way that serves both self and society. And the first step this writer talks about is identify your core values. We've already discussed that in this episode. Another article I read puts it this way: one of the first steps toward achieving balance in your life is self-reflection. Take a moment to identify your personal interests and your responsibilities. What truly matters to you? What are the non-negotiable commitments you have to honor? List them down and prioritize based on their significance. Self-reflection, this writer says, helps you understand your own values and goals, making it easier to strike a balance. The article in Medium, the next step is to set boundaries. The writer says, identify the areas where you feel comfortable saying no and make sure you communicate your boundaries to others. This can help you avoid overcommitting yourself and prioritizing your own needs. Third is to practice self-care, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, including making time to prioritize self-care activities such as exercise, healthy eating, and adequate sleep. The writer encourages us to schedule a regular time for relaxation, hobbies, and other activities that bring you joy. A next step the article recommends is to find meaningful ways to contribute. She explains, contributing to the wider world can be a powerful way to find purpose and meaning in life. Look for ways to use your skills and talents. Remember, we just talked about identifying those to make a positive difference in your community or society as a whole. This can range from volunteering with a local organization to advocating for social change. And finally, she says, communicate openly and honestly. She says in the article, make sure to communicate openly and honestly with the people in your life about your needs and priorities. Listen to their perspectives and work together to find solutions that honor everyone's needs. So these are great steps to answering this question of how can I balance personal needs with responsibilities. The next section of questions is all about redefining success and engaging community support. So question seven, to ask yourself and find the answer that's going to be different for every one of us, right? The question is, what does success look like to me outside of societal expectations? All of us are influenced to one degree or another by societal definitions of success as portrayed in the media, and in many cases expressed by other people in our life, our parents, teachers, friends, and employers. Those definitions are heavily affected by culture, by history, by economics, and usually they include expectations regarding things like academic achievement, career paths, family structure, social status, and financial stability. Often, our use of those most important finite personal resources, time, energy, and attention, is guided by those expectations. And often, it's guided unconsciously by those expectations and our unconscious efforts to live up to a definition of success that we've internalized without ever really thinking about it. It's not surprising, then, if that's the case, when we may feel unfulfilled or restless or dissatisfied with our lives, even when we've met all the metrics that look like success. That's why asking ourselves this question, what does success look like to me outside of societal expectations? That's why asking ourselves this question is so important to creating a life that matters, a meaningfully productive life. We can be doing all the things to live up to whatever society's definition of success is that we've incorporated into our thinking and still not have meaning in our life if we haven't defined it for ourselves. So defining success on your own terms ensures that you pursue what truly matters to you, not just what's expected. One article said it this way: defining success on your own terms allows you to live a more authentic and fulfilling life. When you're able to identify what truly matters to you, you can set goals that align with your values and priorities. This can lead to a greater sense of purpose and satisfaction in both your personal and professional life. the article goes on to say, additionally, defining success on your own terms can help you break free from the comparison trap and focus on your own unique journey. So it's really important to find this definition for yourself. In an article on HuffPost, Amitabh Patel suggests three steps to defining success for yourself. First of all, she says, define yourself on your own terms. So who do you want to be in the world? Number two, she says, dare to be great. She said, when you remove your limiting beliefs, you begin to embrace your full potential. And the third step, she says, is work for it. Just take the action. So defining success based on what's most important to you lets you create a pathway to a life that matters, as we often discuss on this podcast. Another writer reminds us, living intentionally does not mean achieving a life of perfection, for perfection is just an illusion. Rather, building your life with intent and consciousness is about tuning out external noise and looking inwards for guidance and making decisions based on what truly drives you, what brings you joy, and what success means for you. So it's an important question to ask and to answer for yourself. And for more thoughts on this, you might want to check out episode 481 when we talked with guest Anna Lundberg about reimagining success. The next question in this category, question 8, is how can I support other women? I think this is such an important question to ask. There's lots of research out there that shows that in the professional world, women don't always support each other in the ways that we need to. But building a supportive network not only strengthens your own community, but also enriches your own life. I found dozens of articles talking about the importance of women supporting other women, most of them referring to the work environment. And the overwhelming consensus is that women benefit immensely from supportive relationships with other women. As one writer said it, women need other women who will root for them, love them, value them, and stand in their corner no matter the weather. In addition, women cooperatively working together can accomplish so much good for society as a whole. And so asking yourself this question, how can I support other women, makes it so that you can contribute to making the world a better place. So this question, how can I support other women, is an important one for our efforts to make a life that matters. What we put out into the world comes back to us. And when we support other women, we build a community that can make a difference in our own lives as well as in the world around us. My favorite article I read on this topic was found on the Motherly website. And again, I'm going to link to all of these articles in the show notes if you want to do some more research in preparing for doing your own sort of introspection here. The writer in this Motherly article suggested several ways we can begin to support other women, including start by loving yourself. She notes that when you're confident in yourself, when you love yourself, it has the ability to decrease room for your own insecurities to be externalized and projected onto women around you. And when women see other women loving themselves boldly, they will follow. So start by loving yourself. Then she says, be open-minded. Embrace the differences among the women in your life and learn to tailor your support to the different needs each woman has. Third, she says, don't hold back your praise. A few words acknowledging a woman's accomplishments, resilience in the face of challenges, or personal qualities can make a huge difference in that woman's life. And fourth, she says, be vulnerable. Opening ourselves and being transparent makes room for deeper connection and the building of a community. She has a lot more to say in that article, and you can check it out from the link in the show notes if you want to. Other more tangible ways we can support other women include finding and patronizing small businesses run by women, introducing women in your circle to each other, getting involved in a woman-oriented cause, or volunteering with an organization that serves women in crisis. So those are just a few of the things that we can do that can maybe answer that question for you of how can I support other women. There, you'll find links in the show notes to several other articles that suggest ways that we can support other women. So these two questions, how do I define success on my own terms, and how can I support other women, help us provide both direction and the community that can guide us forward in making a life that matters. And the final two questions have to do with lifelong learning and self-care. So question number 9 is, what new skills do I want to acquire and why? And this is a great question to ask, and it really ties to some of the earlier ones. Continuous learning helps keep you engaged and prepared to seize new opportunities professionally and personally. So this is a great question to ask after you've asked the earlier questions, because identifying your values, passions, strengths, barriers, desired legacy, and definition of success, identifying all of those things can help you pin down what you need to learn in order to achieve the goals you have in mind and create the kind of life you want to live. The answers to those earlier questions can give you your why for the skills you need to develop. And thus, looking at who you want to be and where you want to go in life, you ask yourself, what skills will help you accomplish that? Are they professional skills like mastering particular tools or software or other things you need for the career or business you have in mind? Are they interpersonal skills like oral communication, better listening, saying no? Are they skills pertaining to a particular hobby or personal interest, or things you need to know to take better care of yourself or others? The question is, what do you need to learn to make the most of this stage of your life or to prepare for the next one? And how will you learn it? Great question to ask as you go through this process. And the final question, question 10 to ask yourself, is how do I prioritize self-care? We mentioned this earlier and the importance that it kind of plays in some of the other questions. The bottom line is that regular self-care is essential to sustain your energy and focus as you work toward your goals. And we've talked about self-care in the past on several episodes, including way back in episode 160, where we talked about self-care matters. Episode 184, we discussed discernment and self-care with guest Jody Womack. And in episode 464, we discussed creative self-care with Mary Adkins. Taking care of ourselves is an essential part of making sure we can show up in life in the way we want to. So thinking about this, how to prioritize self-care, really the question is, what does self-care mean to you? And how do you make time in your daily life to prioritize those activities that nourish and nurture your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual well-being? Nobody's going to give us that time. We have to be very intentional about it. And so that starts with asking the questions of, what does self-care mean to me? And how do I fit it into my life? How do I make the time for it? Answering those questions honestly can make a huge difference. So again, part of making a life that matters is continual learning and personal development and self-care. So finding ways to incorporate these into your life is essential. And I think it starts by asking these questions. So where does this all take us? I guess centuries ago, Socrates wrote that the unexamined life is not worth living. But it's easy to spend our days just going and doing, taking care of business and reacting to what life sends our way. That can make it hard to take time for reflection and examination of our life, our minds, and the direction we're going. But those questions, that reflection and self-examination can add meaning and purpose to our days. These questions that we talked about in this episode can help with that process of reflection and self-examination and give us direction for our lives. Because as has been said, time well spent leads to a life well lived. A little time for self-reflection, then, I think, is time well spent. So whatever age or stage of life you're at, I invite you to set aside time to consider these questions, to write down your answers or maybe discuss them with a friend or two or a mentor. And you can do this either as maybe a weekly exercise where you take, you know, 20 minutes or so to consider one question at a time, or maybe you want to schedule a personal retreat of a day or two where you can work on this process and work through these questions or others that are meaningful to you. To do that, an investment in self-reflection that can help give direction and meaning and purpose to your days. So these are my thoughts on it. I'd love to know what you think. Do you make time during your week or your year for self-reflection with questions like this or others? Do any of these questions that we discussed pique your interest or get you thinking, your mind going? Or are there other questions that you'd recommend we consider in doing this self-reflection to provide guidance to our daily decisions? I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. You can share your ideas or your questions in the comments section of the show notes for this episode, which you will find at theproductivewoman.com/492. That's also where you'll find, kind of at the bottom of the show notes, a long list of resources that you can look at to get more ideas about this process. You can also post a comment or question on the Productive Woman Facebook page, or if you're a member of the Productive Woman Community Facebook group, join us there to continue the conversation about these things, to encourage each other and give each other ideas and inspiration for questions we can ask to keep ourselves moving in the right direction of making a life that matters as each of us defines it for herself. As always, of course, if you prefer to share your thoughts with me privately, you can email your questions, comments, or suggestions to me at feedback@theproductivewoman.com, and I'd love to hear from you. Before we go, just remember that for listeners of The Productive Woman, Calm is offering that exclusive offer of 40% off their premium subscription. This may be a great way for you to take care of your mental and emotional health by using the Calm app, and you can learn more at calm.com/TPW. That's calm.com/TPW for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. And thank you so much to Calm for supporting The Productive Woman. And that is it for this episode of The Productive Woman. Thank you so much for spending this time with me. I hope you felt like it was time well spent. I hope you found something in it that is encouraging or helpful to you. I look forward to talking with you again very soon. So until next time, remember, extend grace to each other and to yourself, and go make your life matter.